HOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. That's workinames.com.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Later in the show, we'll be talking about how the ISU application process works for students who are immigrants and maybe undocumented, the first annual DACA 5K, and the March for Our Lives, both of which took place on Saturday. And Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau will be here for her monthly segment. So please stay with us for all of that. We had another surprise on Saturday morning when we once again woke up to snow. It's getting to be a Saturday ritual. Winter just does not want to end. But once we get through the mixed precipitation today, it looks like the remainder of the week will at least be a little warmer. Today, the temperature will stay in the 30s, but it will then move up into the 40s starting tomorrow. However, the nights will still be below freezing, and we'll have showers on Wednesday, and then some snow flurries, of course, on Saturday and Sunday. So winter is still with us. Here's a summary of the local Iowa news, as well as Iowa in the national news, during the past week, brought to you by the Iowa Informer. On Saturday, over 1,000 people gathered on the steps of the Iowa Capitol in Des Moines to support stronger gun control measures in the wake of the Parkland, Florida mass shooting. It was part of March for Our Lives when hundreds of thousands of protesters gathered throughout the United States. On Saturday night, Congressman Steve King attended a fundraiser in Ames called Celebrating What Connects Us, at which he reportedly blamed mass shootings not on guns but on, quote, mind-altering medications, families that lacked father figures, and taking morality out of our schools. King's Facebook page has posted memes mocking the high school students who survived the Parkland massacre and are calling for gun reform. One post mocked Emma Gonzalez, one of the students who gave an emotional speech at the March for Our Lives protest in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. On Wednesday, the Iowa Senate voted to approve House Joint Resolution 2009, approved by the House on Monday, that proposes a constitutional amendment saying that, quote, the right of people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed by government, end quote. All 28 Republicans, one independent, and five Democrats voted for the resolution, while 15 Democrats opposed it. According to the resolution, the sovereign state of Iowa affirms and recognizes this right to be a fundamental individual right. Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny. Under Iowa law, resolutions to amend the state constitution must be approved in the same form by the next consecutive General Assembly and then be put before Iowa citizens to be voted on, which in this case would be in November 2020. President Trump's recent announcement that he would impose tariffs on $60 billion worth of Chinese products has raised fear among Iowa farmers about the potential impact on the state's agricultural export market. In response to Trump's decision, China announced on Friday that it would impose tariffs of its own on $3 billion worth of American products, including pork. That same day, the Des Moines Register reported that concerns about a potential trade war set off by Trump's tariffs had already cost Iowa pork producers $240 million from declining prices. When Trump made the announcement earlier this month, Iowa's congressional delegation unanimously opposed the decision. Iowa Soybean Association CEO Kirk Leeds recently met with former Governor Terry Branstad, who is now ambassador to China. Leeds told the Des Moines Register that Branstad, quote, was adamant that this president is working quite hard to get the attention of the Chinese, and he thinks that's an important step that needs to take place. Dave Jamieson, the former director of the Iowa Finance Authority, was fired last week by Governor Kim Reynolds over allegations of sexual harassment. Reynolds announced Jamieson's termination on Saturday. Reynolds' spokesperson, Brenna Smith, said in a statement, "On Friday evening, the governor's office was made aware of credible allegations of sexual harassment against Director Jamieson." Jamieson, a Republican, formerly served as Story County Treasurer. Sonia Kendrick, the founder of the nonprofit Feed Iowa First, died last Tuesday at the age of 40. Kendrick founded the nonprofit in Cedar Rapids in 2011. It partners with churches and other organizations growing vegetables to donate to charities that help feed the hungry. Her obituary asked people to donate to Feed Iowa First or, quote, another organization that provides support for veterans or food insecure Iowans. And those are some of the local Iowa news stories and Iowa in the national news from the past week, brought to you by the Iowa Informer. More stories can be found at iowainformer.com.
We may not yet have reached our glory, but I will gladly join the fight. And when our children tell their story, they'll tell the story of tonight. They'll tell the story of tonight. Tonight.
Have you ever felt like nobody was there? Have you ever felt forgotten in the middle of nowhere? Have you ever felt like you could disappear? Like you could fall and no one would hear?
Well, let that lonely feeling wash away.
All we see is love.
'Cause maybe there's a reason to believe you'll be okay. 'Cause when you don't feel strong enough to stand, you can reach out your hand and hold.
Raise a glass to freedom, something they can never take away. No matter what they tell you,
someone will come running to take you home.
Raise a glass to all of us, tomorrow there'll be more of us, telling the story of tonight.
Out of the shadows, the morning
we'll
is breaking, and
all is new.
It's
only a matter of time. Even when the dark comes crashing through, when you need a friend to carry you, when you're broken on the ground, you will be found. So let the sun come streaming in, 'cause you'll reach up and you'll rise again. If you only look around, you will be found. And when our children tell their story,
you will be found.
They'll tell the story of tonight. No matter what they tell you,
tomorrow there'll be more of us, telling the story of tonight.
The story of tonight.
That was Lin-Manuel Miranda and Ben Platt singing Found Tonight, a song that was written following the Parkland shooting, and they performed it at the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. We'll hear about the march in Des Moines later in the show. Now we've been joined in the studio by Katherine Johnson-Suskey, who is the director of the Office of Admissions at Iowa State University. I invited Katherine to be on the show to talk about the application process for ISU, particularly for people who are immigrants and first-generation applicants. Thanks for being here, Katherine.
Thank you for having me.
And just to remind the listeners, one of the things we're going to be talking about is DACA. And DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And it is a program for immigrants who were brought here as children and now have lived and gone to school in the U.S. since then, but lack legal documentation of their status. So, Catherine, many young people aspire to attend college. And for students who are immigrants, they often face particular challenges. What are some of the challenges that they face, depending on their immigration status, during the application process?
Well, for many students, it's difficult to know how to complete the application. In some cases, students don't know their status until they apply for admission and try to fill out the FAFSA for the first time and learn that students who are either undocumented or covered under DACA cannot complete the FAFSA.
And the FAFSA is for financial aid.
That's correct, the free application for federal student aid. So I've actually had students in my office learn of their status while sitting there with their parents, and that's a very difficult position to be in. We also have students who are citizens, but their parents are undocumented, and so it's difficult to complete the FAFSA, although it's possible. And our undocumented students can't work, so if you can't work, you're not eligible for any federal or state aid. It's very difficult to pay for your college experience.
So lots of barriers that present themselves. And there's also a lot of fear about disclosing one's immigration status in many communities in Iowa. So how does that play out in terms of the application?
We heard from students that it was really difficult to figure out the process. And so we changed around the questions a little bit on the application to make it a little simpler for all students to get to the right application and answer the right questions. We do not ask immigration status on the application because that's not necessary information for us at the admission stage. We only need to know whether a student plans to seek a visa to study at Iowa State so that we can complete the necessary paperwork, like the I-20, to start the process for a student to get a visa. We visit every school district in Iowa. Our admission counselors do, so we work to explain the process. We do have programming and staff who speak multiple languages so that we can work with families who may have questions. And then I also speak at a number of town hall meetings over the last year, and that's just to get the word out to students about the process, how it works, what they can do in the process, and what they can't do.
And the town hall meetings would be in the communities?
Those have been on campus.
On campus.
Mm-hmm. And we have had both current students and prospective students attend those.
I would imagine current students are also helpful in getting the word out back to their communities.
Absolutely. We depend on those current students to ask us the questions, make us aware of any barriers to students so that we can try to remove those barriers. And then they share that information back to younger siblings and community members.
So when someone is applying, they don't have to indicate whether they're a citizen or not on the, I guess it's an online application process.
That's right. They either tell us that they're a U.S. resident, someone who's living in the U.S., or someone who is going to be an international student. Mm-hmm. And for, again, those are the students who need a visa to continue. They have to meet certain requirements to get that visa, and we help process that through our office and the Office for International Students and Scholars.
So that's what you need to know.
That's correct.
Only that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And is there fear associated with the application that can sometimes also be a barrier? Fear that I'm going to have to disclose something about my immigration status?
Absolutely. I think, again, students who for the first time may be finding out that they aren't documented and students who know that they are, anytime you're reporting that to any kind of agency or institution, that can be scary. Again, we don't collect it because we don't need to know. There are certain points in the process that students do need to share that information. For instance, if they're wanting to work on campus, they'll have to show that they're eligible to work, either as a citizen, a permanent resident, or with DACA status, students are eligible to work. So at that point, they might disclose that information so that they can get a job on campus.
So because of kind of the tentative status for DACA, but DACA does still exist, mm-hmm. students who have current DACA status are able to work on campus.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Do you know if other universities in Iowa have similar processes?
I think that from my understanding, some of those processes are a little different in how the questions are asked. Certainly there are similarities. For instance, no student can receive state or federal aid if they are undocumented or DACA. I think that's really it's difficult for our students when they're trying to go to college, but it's important for the public to know no taxpayer dollars go towards funding students who are undocumented or DACA in the college process. And so that's the same across schools. The work requirements, you know, a student has to have a work permit or otherwise be eligible to work. That's going to be the same at any institution.
They might be eligible for private scholarships.
That's absolutely right. So some of our scholarships, especially those through the foundation, so alumni who give back can make that choice. So alumni can say, I want my scholarship to go to a citizen or permanent resident, or they can say, you know, I want that scholarship money to go to any student who is in need. And then in that case, then the scholarship would be eligible to international students as well as undocumented and DACA students. And so there's a mix of different types of scholarships available.
I imagine that many young people who are immigrants are also first-generation college students in the U.S., so their families are likely unfamiliar with the whole process, whether it's application, financial aid, etc. How do you try to reach out to high school students and their families to assist with that?
Well, there's a number of different ways. We certainly have staff who visit around the state. Again, we visit pretty much every high school in Iowa. We go to all the college fairs. We talk to families. There's a number of programs that support students, such as Science Bound and some other programs through the university, such as our TRIO programs, that get the word out in the community. Some of those programs require citizenship or permanent residency, but they also get our staff out in communities so they can answer those questions. And so we try to, again, also offering services in different languages is helpful. I think it's also important for folks to know that every DACA student is not Latino. I think that's a misperception that students, that some folks have. Our DACA students, you know, we know that students come from all over the world to go to live in Iowa and to go to our universities here. And so I think that's important too. But we do, a number of our students do speak Spanish. And so we do have a Latino family visit day that is bilingual. And so families can get their questions answered there as well.
You see a lot of students on student groups on campus having tours. Are those offered in different languages, if possible?
Yeah, if possible. If a group lets us know ahead of time, you know, we host school groups and then, of course, just individual visitors. We'll do everything we can to make that available in the language that meets the family's needs.
Recent months have been particularly difficult for DACA qualified students and applicants in particular. How have you seen that through your office with the tentative nature of DACA right now?
Yeah, just a lot of questions. You know, I think students are just incredibly on edge. You know, I can't imagine my whole life being potentially turned upside down at any moment. And that's what our students feel. We find on campus we have students who may have issues with housing or food insecurity, and so we have mechanisms in place to help with that. I also really encourage students who are dealing with this, particularly on campus, to seek support at the student counseling service. I always tell students being a student is hard enough. To add this fear and this worry, not only for yourself but for your entire family, it is simply too much to bear. And so students should take advantage of the student counseling service. The last service we have is really student legal services, which is really important for students. You know, we've had students in this last year who've been impacted by temporary protected status changes, as well as DACA, and students who are undocumented and don't qualify under any of those programs, and student legal services can provide free assistance and advice.
So it's not just DACA students, it's a whole range of different immigration statuses that come up on your plate.
That's absolutely right.
So you're the director of the Office of Admissions, but you must have to work very closely with all these other offices and groups and efforts across campus to support students.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that's a little different at Iowa State is that the Office of Admissions is part of the Division of Student Affairs. And so our whole focus in this Division of Student Affairs is to serve students and support their student experience. And all of these different resources fall into that, where they live, what they eat, what their experiences are in student organizations, what kind of legal services they're providing, counseling and medical care. All those things fall within the Division of Student Affairs. And so we're very lucky to be placed in that division and have those connections with departments so we can all work together to serve all our students well.
That's interesting that other universities aren't structured like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yay, Iowa State. I know that you work closely with the Office of Diversity and Inclusion because that's when I first met you. I was at a presentation that you did with Dr. Liz Mendez-Shannon from that office. So I know you work closely with that office as well.
Absolutely. We work with them on a number of different different issues and areas. Dr. Liz is just incredible. She's such a resource to the campus and a leader and someone who supports our students and cares so much for them. You know, we work with diversity and inclusion also on issues surrounding LGBT students, multicultural students. We want to be sure that we are affirming identities and serving students throughout the application process because that's the entry of students to the university and it's so crucial.
That's a wonderful way to look at it because we think of admissions offices just being paperwork in the old days.
It used to be.
Yeah. And can you just, before you mentioned a couple groups that also assist with getting the information out about the application process. I think one was called TRIO and Science Bound. Could you just say a little bit about them?
Sure. TRIO programs are national programs, and again, they must they serve students who are citizens and permanent residents. And so I believe that they are not able to, because of their grant requirements, serve undocumented students. But I hold a TRIO very close to my heart. Those are programs like the Upward Bound program, things along those lines, student support services. So not only to support students to keep college as an option, but also to support them. Really important to me, my mother actually went to college because of educational talent search back in the 60s. And so I'm a big believer in TRIO programs, and it changes the trajectory of families, and that's really crucial.
And Science Bound, I know a bit more about. It's focused on bringing students into the STEM fields. And do students have to be documented to be a part of that?
As far as I know, now that office is not run by the Office of Admissions. I don't believe that they check status as those students are starting out in that program.
If you could summarize for us, if people have some concerns around their immigration status and want to know about the application process or what else would you remind them of?
Mm-hmm. We at Iowa State University are here to support students. We want to see students go to college and succeed in college. That's why we've all invested our whole lives in higher education. And so we are all about access. You know, yes, we have to play by the rules. The rules are there, and there are certain things that undocumented students won't be able to do. But we can help students navigate to find their options, to get through the process, get into college, and hopefully graduate.
And there is also some fear of the immigration services accessing student records. Should that be a concern?
I don't think so, but I certainly can't speak for what can happen in the future. The thing that's important for students to remember is that the Office of Admissions does not know the immigration status of most of our students. Only when that student is self-reporting that for other reasons, again, to get work or to qualify for financial aid, and students then report their status. Any request of academic records would likely require a subpoena and also would need to be scrutinized by FERPA requirements. So that data is protected. And frankly, the government data is probably more robust than what we would have at the university in any case. And so I can't see a need for the government to come and request information from us on status. And really, we don't have much.
Well, thank you very much for filling us in on this. I've been speaking with Katherine Johnson-Suskey, the director of the Office of Admissions at Iowa State University.
Thank you so much.
Despite the sleet and snow on Saturday morning, about 250 people gathered to run or walk 3.1 miles, or 5K, around the campus. The event was the first annual DACA 5K run and walk. DACA recipients, remember, became able to work and go to university under President Obama, but their status is in question now. However, the end of the program has been legally challenged, and so everything about DACA is kind of in limbo right now. And as Katherine Johnson-Suski just said, this has created a great deal of uncertainty and stress for ISU students affected by it. And that was, in part, the motivation for the DACA fundraiser on Saturday morning, which went on despite the cold and wet weather. I was at the event and spoke first with two of the students who were part of the group that organized the event, and then we'll hear from others who were running and walking on that snowy morning.
My name is Daniela Flores. I'm a fifth-year PhD candidate in the Ecology, Evolution, and Organismal Biology Department at Iowa State, and I'm the president of the SACNAS chapter on campus and a member of the SACNAS Board of Directors.
And what does SACNAS stand for?
It is the Society for the Advancement of Chicanos, Hispanics, and Native Americans in Science. It is an all-inclusive organization that works at the national level to advance the careers of underrepresented scientists across the country, from undergrads to professionals.
And you are?
I'm Juan Dutumas Heredia. I'm a sixth-year PhD candidate in chemistry. And I'm working as a vice president of the Latina and Latino Graduate Student Association, and I'm also a member of the Latinx Leadership Council, which is the group that organized this entire thing.
Can you tell me a bit about what was the motivation for this whole event?
Yeah, so with the changes and the possible revisions or potential repeal to the DACA program, we wanted to have a community event where we could show support and stand together with members of our community whose future in this country is uncertain.
These people kind of have an uncertain future, whether they can stay in this country, and even some of them mixed status families. Their parents might be in danger of being deported, so we wanted to show support for those families who might have some sort of unforeseen financial burden because of deportations or because of the DACA status they might have.
So it's kind of a visual display of support for DACA students here at ISU, and it's a chilly, snowy morning here, and there's still a lot of people here. But it's also a fundraiser. What will the money go to?
Yeah, so this is a fundraiser to create a scholarship fund for students on the Iowa State campus who are DACA. So it's hopefully going to turn into an annual scholarship that we can award to a couple of students each year to hopefully help allow them to stay on campus and be successful students.
Because DACA students aren't eligible for a lot of other financial aid, is that right?
That's correct. A lot of the financial aids or scholarships that are available either through Iowa State or through the FAFSA, they do require people to be citizens or legal residents. So some of these are not entirely available to DACA students or to people who may perhaps be undocumented. So it's really nice to have this kind of set-aside fund that's actually crowdsourced, so there's not necessarily any funds coming in from Iowa State. So it's all just raised by the people.
Hopefully this will turn into an annual event, whether it's a 5K that we do each year or if we do something unique each year. But we'll continue to do something annually to continue putting funds into that scholarship fund. There is a donations page on the Iowa State Marketplace that is titled Donations for DACA, and so they can donate there online.
Is there anything else you want listeners to know about the experiences of DACA students or your efforts around them?
I would just like to say that it is pretty cold and snowy here, and I think it's a huge show of how supportive this community is, how many people we have here today. We don't have the final counts, but we have close to 250 people registered for this event, and we've raised around $6,000.
Thank you very much for talking with us, and congratulations on your efforts today. There's a big long line of people still registering. So why are you here?
We heard this race is kind of to support DACA and the students who receive DACA. So I'm mostly here to support the students.
And when you got up this morning and looked outside and saw the weather, did you have second thoughts?
I did in the beginning, but then my friend also told me, oh, it's not that bad, and we're doing it for a good cause, so.
I came to support a lot of my students who've taken classes in the U.S. Latino Studies Department here at Iowa State, or program, rather. So it's great to be out here. Even though it's snowy, I think it makes it even more fun and more meaningful. It's still a good turnout.
This looks like the School of Ed contingent.
It is.
So I'm Amanda Baker, and I'm a professor in the School of Education, and I think we're just here to support the cause, I guess. DACA students, DACA recipients are part of our community, and so I think it's really important to come out there and support them.
Dr. Perez, I know you're a runner, so maybe it wasn't so hard to get out here this morning because you might go for a run in this weather anyway.
It was hard, mostly because it's cold and snowy and somewhat dangerous. You don't want to slip and fall. Been thinking about this for a while, right? So it literally was a matter of privilege. You know, folks, not just about DACA status, but having known and met folks who have risked their lives to either cross borders or protect their families or their safety. It's not that hard to be outside for, you know, 30 to 45 minutes in the snow when this is temporary. And it's not my everyday reality. So it was hard, but it wasn't that hard to make a decision to run. We have about 5 or 6 faculty here. And I would say I see at least 6 or 7 graduate students here, master's and doctoral, which is awesome.
So the School of Ed is quite well represented.
My name is Rachel Torres, and I'm here to support the DACA young people. I am second generation Mexican American, very proud of that, and I want people to have the same opportunities that I did. They are wonderful people, and we need them in our country.
And did you come up from Des Moines?
Yes, I came up with Jean, my friend Jean. And weather isn't, you know, the greatest, but this is important.
I'm Alexa Inkton. I'm a grad student at Iowa State, and I just wanted to make sure that I supported the cause. I think that the purpose of this race is important in terms of all the proceeds going to scholarships for DACA recipients. I think that we should support our students and make sure that they feel like they belong here and they have a home. So that's why I'm here.
My name is Julian Neely. I'm a student here at Iowa State University. I'm here just to show support and also donate towards the scholarship to support DACA students. I think it's really important to be able to do that financially and also just to be here as like another body, just to be another support and a support system to DACA students.
My name is Sarah Pamprin, and I'm here. I have a student who's a DACA recipient, and thinking about how I can privilege her experience a little bit more. So brave the weather from Ankeny to be here for her.
Yes, I'm Soko Starovin to support DACA students, and then those who support them. I want to be a part of it,
yeah.
And my daughter as well.
I'm Tibi Kelcha, and yeah, I'm here to support the DACA recipients.
And as you have some children with you?
Yep, 2 kids. Oscar and Adam, 8 and 5.
So it's after 9 and we're still waiting in line because more and more people are registering. So it'll be a little late start, but they're trying to accommodate everyone. It's beautiful on Central Campus. We're registering right underneath the campanile in that little enclosed area at the base of the campanile. And the campus looks gorgeous. The trees are covered with ice crystals and the snow is still falling, but people are having a great time talking and just being here. Would you like to say anything, Dr. Liz?
I am here to support the community of these amazing and strong, powerful students. And it's pretty amazing to see the turnout. We decided rain, snow, the only thing that would hold us back is like a thunderstorm, and that's just, you know, because of our safety. But everyone is here. It is a full house. We are pretty excited. Our hands are cold. Our cheeks are red and they're frozen, but our hearts are pumping strong.
That last voice you heard was Dr. Liz Mendez-Shannon, Project Director for Hispanic Latinx Affairs in the Office of the Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion at ISU. She also assisted with the organization of the DACA 5K, which took place on Saturday with great energy and enthusiasm despite the snow and sleet. Also on Saturday was the March for Our Lives, which occurred in many places around the country and even the world. The size of the march in D.C. was estimated at 800,000 people. Marches were held at several locations in Iowa, including Des Moines, and KHOI was there to bring you some of the sounds of that event. The speeches began with the reading of the names of the school shooting victims in Parkland, Florida.
We want to honor the victims of Parkland and their families. The 17 names, and then we will have a moment of silence for them and for all the victims and families of gun violence in our nation. We say these names out loud to honor them and to say never again. Alyssa Aladuff, age 14. Scott Bagel, age 35. Martin Anguiano, age 14. Nicholas Dworwart, age 17. Aaron Fies, age 37. Jamie Gutenberg, age 14. Christopher Hickson, age 49. Luke Hoyer, age 15. Kara Loughran, age 14. Gina Montalto, age 14. Haquin Oliver, age 17. Elena Petty, age 14. Meadow Pollock, age 18. Helena Ramsey, age 17. Alexander Schachter, age 14. Carmen Shintrup, age 16. Peter Wang, age 15. We hold each of these victims and their families in our hearts.
Before I start, I just want to say I see a sign up here that says support Black Lives Matter like you support March for Our Lives. I could not agree with that more. December 14th, 2012. Sandy Hook is the first school shooting that I remember. I was 12 years old when Sandy Hook happened. I'm currently 18. How has nothing changed over the course of more than 6 years? Senator Joni Ernst has received $3,124,273 from the NRA.
This past November, we saw what happened in Virginia. Voters ranked gun violence as the second most important issue when considering their candidates. And they elected candidates who made gun violence a prevention, a priority. And that's in the NRA's home state.
I have two beautiful little sisters, 7 and 8 years old. The shootings just have to stop. I want to go to school and not have to worry about my safety. I want my sisters to go to school and not have them worry about their safety. There's absolutely no reason why 17-year-olds should be able to walk into Walmart and buy a war weapon.
But for so many people around our country, and especially in my hometown, those people see it as another everyday occurrence. And quite frankly, that's disgusting. We as individuals and as a group of people who want to make change in our state and country have to stand up to the NRA. We have to stand up to the politicians who are weak enough to say that their voice matters more than the lives of our children.
One of the actions that you can take is how you use your money. And so there are corporations that have taken their money away from the NRA and have decided to not sell AR-15s and other things. So use your money in a smart way. Support Dick's Sporting Goods and support the airlines that are not taking money from the NRA. There's lots of information on the internet. So find out what those corporations are and make sure that you use your money in a smart way that supports gun control issues.
Thank you for being here, because you are the power. You are the people. You are the ones that will make a difference. I don't want to give a teacher a gun. I want to give you computers. I don't want to give a teacher a gun. I want to give our teachers raises. I don't want to give a teacher a gun. I want to make sure that you can go to college and not fall in debt. I want to make sure. But you got to help do that. And I say that because gun violence isn't going to stop tomorrow. I know we want it to. I see the signs that says not. It didn't stop after Columbine. It's not going to stop after Florida. But what does bring it to an end, if you keep standing for what matters and showing the power and the unity that you're showing here today.
Tell me about your sign. What does it say?
Science skills, not lockdown drills. My name is Jane Grimm.
And what school are you at in Ames?
Edwards Elementary.
I'm Rohan Gupta and I go to Waukee High School. This was something I really wanted to do, and so if there's, I believe in it, so there's no point in holding back from something you believe in.
I'm Ross Wilburn. I came here to hear some strong, powerful youth voices, and I wasn't disappointed. Yeah, we need to have strong gun control. We can honor the Second Amendment and have sensible gun law. It's also important to recognize that there's a First Amendment, and people are here assembling peacefully to send a strong message that enough is enough. That's part of Let's Be Iowa.
Enough is enough. 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 Enough is enough.
My name's Lyric, and I go to Hyatt and Central Academy.
And why did you think it was important to come today?
Because I feel like our voices are the most powerful as youth, and they deserve to be heard.
My name is Caitlin Potter. I go to Valley High School, and I'm here today to walk for those 17 students and all of the other students and people of the community who have died, and just to support gun control and gun reform. I go to school each day, and I'm in fear when I'm walking through the halls that, you know, the alarms are going to go off and there's going to be a shooter in the school, and in fear that, you know, I won't be able to get out soon enough or I'm going to see my friend shot down right in front of me. And it's just a big fear that I have to face each day.
And I've been talking to a lot of young people, so let me talk to some not so young people.
I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I'm here to make sure that my children don't have to suffer like the other children have. It's a terrible thing to have to watch that on TV, whether it's our community or another community. I don't want to have it happen in our community, and I hope it never does.
Why did you decide to volunteer today?
Because I'm a parent, and it's just time. Enough is enough.
Enough is enough. Enough is enough. Enough is enough. Enough is enough. Enough is enough.
Those were some excerpts from a few of the speakers and participants at the March for Our Lives in Des Moines on Saturday. As you heard, the speeches were very emotional, with sadness and anger and hope all being expressed. Many of the speakers were young people from local high schools and colleges, and some were teachers. There was an emphasis on taking action, for example, on registering to vote and getting out to vote. This is Local Talk on KHOI. And we've been joined in the studio by Allison Walter, who is with the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. And Allison comes in each month to tell us what we need to know about what's going on in our area. So what have you got for us?
We have lots coming up here in the next month or so.
I'm sure it's spring. Things are heating up.
Yes, for sure. Actors has a performance that will be this weekend and next on the 29th and the 31st. And the, I'm sorry, 29th through 31st, and then April 6, 7, and 8. Vanya's and Sonia and Masha and Spike. It's a quirky comedy about family relationships. Sounds like a hilarious show, and it is a 2013 Tony Award winner.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard the name. And they're doing all comedies this year. Series of different kinds of comedies.
And they are getting ready to announce next season, their 63rd season. Uh-huh. They're going to do an announcement party on Friday, April 13th. And it will be lots of fun. I believe I heard it's all murder Mysteries. Oh. So they'll have hors d'oeuvres and door prizes and discount tickets for next season. And that is Friday the 13th at 6:30, announcing their 63rd season.
That's kind of perfect. They're going to announce Murder Mysteries on Friday the 13th.
The Iowa Arboretum out near Madrid has lots going on. An Italian night on Friday the 30th. They have tomato transplanting on Saturday the 31st at 10 o'clock. Offer a morning session and we'll show you how to transplant tomatoes grown under different conditions and how that will impact the season for you. Then their spring symposium is on Saturday, April 7th. They will have lifelong gardener and lover of plants, Joseph Chechnovich. I had to think about how that. he's worked in nurseries in the U.S. and Japan. He's also been on the radio and has written a number of gardening books, so should be a wonderful presentation. They do ask you to pre-register for the spring symposium on April 7th. Mm-hmm. On Sunday the 8th, they're having their spring woof walk. A fun afternoon for canines and their people. Bring your dog for a little socializing with others and walk the trails.
And this is all at the Iowa Arboretum.
Iowa Arboretum.
See, yep. I've been there to buy trees, but I didn't even realize they had all these other events.
They have wonderful events almost every weekend, so it's a great place to get out. And they'll, with the dogs, they'll walk the trails and have lots of fun. So that's Saturday, April 8th at 1 o'clock, and they're doing Maple Syrup Day. Taste real maple syrup and learn about the art and science of production. You can see how to tap and cook the sap into delicious maple syrup. And so they'll also, of course, have a pancake breakfast to go along with that one. and that's Saturday, April 14th at 8 o'clock in the morning. So
lots going on there.
Every weekend. Yeah. Trinity Christian Reformed Church will be having their Lent and Easter services. Good Friday is March 30th. They'll do an Easter sunrise service at 6:30 in the morning and Easter morning worship at 9:30. The ISU bookstore is doing some fun spring events here. A book signing with ISU alum Gregory Wintis on Tuesday, April 3rd, 2:30 in the afternoon. And he'll be signing his debut novel, Blue Green. He's a father of two and a former deputy sheriff. He will be in town on Tuesday the 3rd, 2:30 to 4:30 for his book signing.
At the ISU bookstore.
At the ISU bookstore, and that's in the Memorial Union. They're doing story time with the Cat in the Hat on Saturday, April 14th at 10:30. And they will be reading, of course, the Dr. Seuss books and with the Cat in the Hat. They'll have some coloring pages available. Cat in the Hat will be taking pictures with everyone. So that should be kind of fun. Saturday,
so there'll
the 14th.
Be someone dressed as the character?
The Cat in the Hat will be there.
Any special occasion for, I mean, reason for that? Or just...
You know, I think it's just a good family activity. And Little Quack is a book that was written by an Ames native, Derek Anderson, and he'll be there on Saturday, April 14th as well, and he'll be signing his book and doing a book reading. Evidently, it's Little Quack's 15th birthday.
Mm-hmm. And that's all at the ISU bookstore.
Right. Story County Conservation, they invite the public to their OWLS presentation. OWLS stands for Older, Wiser, and Livelier Seniors. And they will do programs on Tuesday, April 3rd, Aldo Leopold and the Roots of the Land Ethic. uses photos and quotes from Aldo's childhood and early career to study the influence of his youthful discoveries.
And he was a professor at ISU, is that
right.
correct?
Yes. Yes. Development of the land ethic, yes. Mm-hmm. And they do have lunch. If you'd like to participate, they ask you to register ahead for that. And that would be on the Story County Conservation webpage. Cook's Emporium, of course, does their Saturday cooking demonstrations, and they will continue that. Saturday, April 7th, they'll be doing waffle cookies, and Saturday, April 14th, they'll be doing steak tacos.
The waffle cookies, those are like those thin, crispy little waffle-like things.
Yum.
Swedish, I think, or Scandinavian or something.
Yeah. Cook's Emporium has a new owner. Mindy purchased the business from Marg, but Marg is sticking around to do cooking demonstrations. So that's good news. She's been a longtime owner of the store. Hmm. On university campus, we are having a special bell casting for the campanile, and they are making a miniature working carillon model of the campanile. And they'll be doing the bell casting of the bells here on campus with the company that will be making them. And this is the first time that it's ever been done on campus. And so they will be doing a special event on Tuesday, April 10th, 4 o'clock on Central Campus. And they'll also be giving tours of the campanile. And if you haven't been up there to the top, it's amazing. You should take advantage of that opportunity. So tours start at 3 with the bell casting at 4 o'clock.
So you can watch them do the casting?
Yes.
What are they going to do with the miniature?
It's going to be available to tour around the state and
will
perform.
Will it sound the same?
Will.
The idea?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah. And it will be about 6 feet tall, and it's made that it kind of folds up and so that it can be moved around. But it will have real bells in it. It will actually play.
Hmm.
Yes. So Tinshi Tam, who is the university carillonneur, has been working on this project and doing a lot of fundraising, and it's going to be a real asset to the university. University Museums does yoga on Wednesdays at Christian Peterson Museum. So Wednesday, April 11th at 5:30, you can do a free yoga, enrich your yoga experience, and go beyond the physical and inviting an artistic perspective to your awareness. So they talk about the current exhibition in the Christian Peterson Gallery, and then you tie that to your yoga practice. And so they do that one Wednesday a month at the Christian Peterson Art Museum on campus. The All Iowa's Art Showcase has been going on a couple of Saturdays in March. They have a couple here in April as well, April 13th and 20th. And the performances in this series include Jen McClung and Elizabeth Moen on April 13th and Evan Campbell and Patressa Hartman on the 20th. And then, of course, there's artwork on display in the City Auditorium lobby 1 hour prior to the show. So that is April 13th at 20th at Ames City Auditorium. Doors open at 6, and the music begins at 7. We have football. The spring football game
football?
Is coming up. Three of them,
didn't I? I hope
it
stops snowing by then.
Yes, me too. Saturday, April 14th, will be the Cardinal versus Gold scrimmage for our Cyclone football. And that will be at Jack Trice Stadium.
And that's kind of an inter-team
game. Right. Yep. They've been doing some spring practices, so this will just be an inter-team scrimmage.
And is that the stadium?
At Jack Trice Stadium, yeah. And people love to get out there and tailgate a little bit before the kickoff, of course. So, Art Cicotti is doing his monthly glass workshops mm-hmm. where you can blow your own piece of artwork. Saturday, April 14th is vase making, and Saturday, April 28th, they will be doing a drinking glass with a handle. And I have seen some photos of him with these students that just the general public comes in, and he's amazing, the pieces that people are able to make their first time blowing glass. So
that is remarkable. I remember you talking about that one other time when you were on.
They did flowers.
It's surprising to me that you can learn it so quickly.
Yes, yeah. So
I'm sure it takes a long time to get good at it.
Well,
but
but
you can produce something.
Right.
Yeah.
Saturday, April 21st, we have the Eco Fair at City Hall, and we have the second annual Bicycle Day for Ames, which will start about 10 o'clock at Brookside Park. And that's just open to anyone that would like to ride. It's a slow roll ride using the shared paths that connect the City of Ames, the community, and the university, and just a fun way to connect with the community and bicycle. And the Eco Fair is at City Hall starting at 9 o'clock, free family event. So lots going on this month, as well as a number of shows at Stevens Auditorium as well. So keep those on your radar.
So people can check all that out on your webpage.
Yes, thinkames.com is our website, and all of our social media is Sights of Ames, named after our favorite mascot, Cy. So it's
Cy-T-E-S. Got it.
Sights of Ames.
Okay.
On social media.
So it sounds like there are a lot of amazing things coming up, many of which themed around spring. So
yes,
we need the weather to cooperate.
We need the weather to warm up a little bit.
Give us some spring feeling.
Please.
Well, thanks for coming in, Allison.
Thank you.
We always appreciate it. Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Found Tonight by Lin-Manuel Miranda and Ben Platt. Here at KHOI, we're getting ready for our semi-annual spring fun drive, which will be coming up in April. But why not beat the rush and become a member or make a donation now? You can go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button or call 515-292-2878, or even better, come by the station and join in person. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of our volunteer team of producers and reporters. If you would like to join the team, contact us at 515-292-2878. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.